Thank you. Thank you for inviting me tonight. I feel really good tonight. For a whole lot of reasons, I feel good because I didn't drink today. That's one blessing that I have every day. I get up and I drop to my knees and I ask God that, you know, just get me through the day. And, you know, I feel good at the end of the day, no matter what my day is like. You know, I can get over it. You know, before I couldn't get over it, I used to, you know, drink over it. Wow, this is really a good night. I'm running to my brother here from from New Jersey, and you know what? I just thought about this on my way back. We were at the same table also, because Tommy and I sit at the same table every retreat. You were at that table. I remember it. Yes, you were, and it's good to see you tonight, too. Come a long way, you know? I just moved into the area. I'm new to the area, and I rode into town less than 6 months ago. Visiting a bunch of meetings in the area, I guess it's a tradition to let people know kind of, you know, geographically what's going on with you. My original home group is in New York City. That's where I got sober at. It's called Living Now. It's on the lower part of Manhattan, in the Bowery, actually. My home group, and we were talking about this earlier, in Jersey is Crossroads. That's a group that's at Beth Israel Hospital, and it's a group that when I moved to New Jersey, I started attending. And my home group here in Clearwater, and they don't know it right now, but it's going to be this group here. And I'll be at that meeting, a business meeting, and I hope you guys will accept me in the group here. I'll put in my role. 2 cents. I, you know, it's a funny thing about us, you know, and about me especially. I had a real problem fitting in, you know, when I was growing up, and always kind of, you know, hesitant about doing stuff and, you know, kind of trying to be a part of the group. And I was thinking about this earlier today. I said, you know, I love this group, this Thursday night group. This is one of the greatest groups I've ever been to. I mean, I really, really like this group. And as Andy said, thank you. And that really, you know, describes my feeling about this group. Why haven't I joined this group? You know, okay, I haven't joined this group because, you know, don't want to make a commitment, you know, don't want to do service, don't want to get involved, don't want to be a part of, you know, all those kind of things, you know, that the tapes run in our head, you know. And we could, you know, skirt around it. No, I can't. I got to be a part of AA. I got to be a member of AA. I got to be a participant in AA. I can't sit on the sidelines and pretend that, you know, this is going to work for me without being a part of it, you know. So that's why I'm publicly making this commitment, so I can't weasel out of it, you know. But anyway, I'm going to move on and just tell you a little bit about myself, because I want to talk about a few things tonight, and I just want to let you know who I am, because I am new to the group and the community, and it's important that I do this. I grew up in Florida, ended up in New York, New Jersey area, but I grew up here. Not in the Clearwater area, but I grew up in Miami. That was a long, long time ago. I'm 54 years old, so that was quite a while ago. And I got to tell you, I had a great upbringing. I really enjoyed growing up in the area. I enjoyed all the stuff about growing up in the South, especially in Florida, where you can play outdoors all year round. And, you know, it was just so much to do. I grew up in a section called Liberty City, not very well known for, you know, good living right now. But at the time I grew up in Liberty City in Miami, a section in Miami, it was a wonderful little cool place to grow up. There was violence in the neighborhood, there was violence around me, but, you know, for some reason I didn't get hooked into that, you know. I did my little stuff, you know, but I was just very fortunate, very blessed that, you know, I got through that. Still had my ups and downs, though. As I shared the last time I was here, I had some real, real role models, you know, growing up. I had my Uncle Ted, who I loved dearly, who died of this disease, and I wanted to be like him a lot. And I had other guys in the neighborhood that were older than I was that, you know, I sort of looked to as, you know, my little role models, but they weren't the greatest role models. But one thing that, you know, I connected with those guys were, you know, the fact that they drank or they, you know, they dress cool, or they, you know, they had big cars, or you know, some of that, you know, outside stuff. Took my first drink when I was about 16 years old. I had my little bottle gang, you know, you put all our coins together, took that drink, and man, it really made me feel good. I remember to this day. I mean, it's amazing what an effect this has on you. I mean, it's still ingrained in my mind how that felt and how I felt when I took that drink. I really felt comfortable. I felt a lot more comfortable with the people I was with. I felt more comfortable in my skin. I felt more confident also. And I think I try to regain that first feeling throughout my drinking career, but never was able to achieve that because I was not a cool person when I drank. I was a pretty sloppy, funky, you know, alcoholic. I mean, I was like one of those fall down drunks, you know, that couldn't hold his booze. But in my mind, I was in training. You know, I thought that it would get better. I'm here to tell you, it didn't get any better. It got worse. So, for my whole entire, and I drank a long time. I drank 23 years. I drank a long time. But I continue to, and I love one of the things that I love about this group. It has the readings, and some groups are getting away from that. And I think that's the old school kind of thing in me. I like to hear that stuff. You know. I like to hear, you know, the reading before the meeting to remind everyone in the room where we are, where we come from. And it talks about, you know, switching up with all that other stuff. And I did all that. I can identify with that. I did all that kind of stuff to try to get better at it. But I never did. I never did get better at it. I got worse. I barely got out of high school. You know, it's not that I was a stupid kid. It was just I had other interests, you know. I ran the street, stuff like that. You know, wasn't that, you know, into the books. Although my father really, really was one of those kind of guys. You know, you better finish high school. I'm gonna kill you. You know, he was serious, man. This guy, my dad, I love him to death. He's still with me, with us today, and he's my best friend. We didn't get along when I was growing up, you know, because he was a guy that went to work every day. You know, he was a serious character. He didn't drink. You know, he was a great role model. I didn't see it at the time, but he was a really terrific role model. Hardworking guy and very, you know, like you got to be something, you know, kind of guy, you know. And I just didn't want to hear that, you know. I really didn't. So I did enough to get by and to stay out of trouble and stay out of harm's way. But the day I finished high school, and this is how this thing works with me, this is how this disease, you know. I had taken that drink at 16, and I graduated high school a year later when I was 17, and I was sort of getting a taste of the, you know, the life, you know. So the day I finished high school, I moved out. I moved out of my parents' house, and I had my own apartment set up. I had a little part-time job. I was enrolled in a junior college, and I had a lot of ambition, had a lot of, you know, like I'm a do it, you know, and you know I'm on my own and I'm grown, and you know, and I told my dad that day. I said, you know, you've been a great father, but I'm out of here, you know, and you know I had so much confidence in myself, you know, as a, you know, this is what I can do. But the other thing that was on the other part of me at that time was the fact that I had started drinking. I started making that one of the main focuses of my life at that time, such an early time for me, but it was something that was just pulling on me at that time and continuing to pull at me throughout my drinking career. Drinking became a real, real serious part of my life at that time. I didn't last very long, you know, as I was in my mind, you know, out there on my own, but I stayed out there. I didn't get back to my parents' house, and I did go back until, you know, later on, but, you know, I was pretty beat up at the time, but I remember having this job, and I remember trying to, you know, stay in school, but I also remember I had my place, and I partied all night. You know, I was kind of resilient at the time because you're younger, you're resilient, your body could take it. You get up the next morning, throw some water on your face, and you go, wow, you know, and run around the block, you know, and whatever, you know, just to get right. And I was able to do that because I was younger and my body was a little stronger. But as I got older, you know, it just started to wear me down physically, until the very end that I was like in really, really horrible shape physically. But that lasted, that plan didn't last very long. I got kicked out of school. I eventually lost that job. I eventually did a lot of geographical stuff. I left town. I ended up in I'm going to talk a little bit about, you know, just some of the stuff that I went through. You know, I started drinking, and I started, like, getting different jobs, and I ended up leaving town. I ended up in Boston, Massachusetts. I lived there for 2 years, and I went there specifically to try and get away from Miami because I thought that was my problem. And I went there doing the same thing I did in Miami. I drank, and I, you know, just did the same, very, very exact same thing. Ended up bumming around there, working in Boston, never getting in school. And I remember this incident, and I just need to, I always think about this. I always think about, like, some of the hard winters. I had two really tough winters in Boston where I didn't have a lot of money. I remember one night I had $1 to my name, and I was standing on the corner. This was in Jamaica Plains. Right on the corner of Forest Hill Road there, and there was a liquor store and there was a pizza parlor right next door. And my biggest decision of the night was to buy a beer or a slice of pizza, and I was very hungry, very hungry. Now, you know what won out. The beer won out. But in the process of it, some really crazy stuff happened. I'm pacing up and down in front of the liquor store and the pizza parlor, pacing up and down, and this must have went on. I thought it was only about 5 minutes, but after the cop came and threw me on the car and accused me of, you know, plotting to rob the liquor store, chasing the joint, he told me that the owner said that I was walking up and down in front of his joint for the last hour. You know, so they thought that I was casing the joint. You know, of course I was, you know, who me? You know, pissed off about it. But what, you know, it was such a major decision in my life, you know. What should I do? Beer or pizza? The normal, you know, alcoholic, non-alcoholic, a person that is not an alcoholic would automatically get something to put in their body. You would get a slice of pizza, some water, or whatever, you know, but I got the beer. That was what, I definitely wanted the beer after the cop jacked me up, but I was going to get the beer anyway. That was no choice. I don't know why it took me an hour to decide that. That was the choice from the very beginning. But this is the kind of things that started to happen to me. You know, it was such a struggle between the alcohol and something normal. The alcohol and something normal. That is like almost the story of my drinking. The alcohol was always there versus something that, quote, people would normally do. I would be on the side of the alcohol. I would always be a part. That would be my thing. That's what I would do. Ended up drinking a whole lot in Boston and living a pretty horrible existence there, hanging out in the, you know, some of the sleaziest joints you could imagine, you know, working as a busboy and drinking every day and just being, you know, just not having a good time of it. Ended up leaving there and getting into the military. Did some of that. Did that for about 5 years. I continued to drink. I remember one incident where I had a real, real heavy night of drinking and ended up having a fight with an MP, rolling down a hill, you know. I don't know why. I'm not one of those kind of guys that, you know, look for fights, but, you know, I was drinking that night, so you could expect anything, you know. Looking back on it now, it's pretty dumb because I ended up in jail and ended up being, you know, my company commander coming and getting me out and the whole embarrassment of that. But, you know, I always thought, like, wow, it's, you know, people are picking on me, it ain't my fault, it's the breaks. Never did I, you know, it was just so far from my mind, you know, it's the booze, man. You know, it's the booze, it ain't, you know, y'all, it's booze, you know. But I ended up going back to Miami and getting married, and it's it was in the midst of some of my serious, real serious drinking. I ran into my high school sweetheart in a Eckerd's drugstore, you know, and it was like love at first sight because, you know, she was really looking good. I mean, she had a job, she had a car, you know, I had nothing, you know, and I was like, you know, I was on my knees. I mean, I was begging her, you know, can I marry you, you know. It's just, you know, it's just insanity. It's insanity I always, you know, seem to migrate to, you know. I remember, you know, after we did our little wedding, and we, you know, when the wedding was over, I was sitting around, and she was saying, are you going to get a job, you know? It didn't really dawn on me that that was part of the deal, but, you know, because I was drunk doing the whole thing. I was sobering up, you know. But reality, she gave me a reality check. She was a real lady. I mean, she was about real stuff. I was about, let's stay on the honeymoon for another year, and then, you know. Anyway, it was, my decision was, a job was to, you know, I had been trying to get back in school so I wouldn't be drafted, you know, and I had to go down the draft board and all that kind of stuff. To make a long story short, I ended up in the military after that because I needed, I said, well, I'm going to get a job, I'll go into the Army. You know, that was probably the beginning of the end of the relationship, because the 5 years I spent away from my family, my wife, and I have a stepdaughter, I got a whole lot worse. She got a whole lot better. So when I came back, it was just not happening. You know, I was like a maniac. You know, I would perform. I would do really insane stuff. I remember the day she kicked me out. You know, it was one of those kind of things you see on TV where your clothes start flying out the door, literally. And don't come back here. You know, you're scary. You know, you're scaring me. You're scaring my daughter. And I had we had a child at the time. She got pregnant as soon as I got back. And I have a wonderful daughter and a grandson. She's 22 years old now. But I was only in the house less than 6 months of my daughter's life. I mean, that's how crazy I was. I mean, she literally kicked me out. Like, get out of here. You know, I can't take care of three kids. Your stepdaughter, your daughter, and you, it won't work. So you gotta go. I remember, Chuck last week, and you guys should have been, I hope everyone was here last week, because that was a great meeting. I remember him saying, I'm sitting in the back and I'm listening to Chuck, you know, I'm saying, he's stealing my line here. I'm just kidding about that. But my wife said the same thing. His wife, I said the same thing to myself that he said when his wife left him. And he said, and I'm saying, I'm out on the lawn, you know, picking up my clothes, and what's going through my mind is, oh, man, she's losing a good guy here. I mean, it's her loss. Her loss. I know I'm going to be getting a call soon. You know, how could she do without me, you know? I got to tell you, it's been a long, my daughter's 22 years old. I ain't got the call yet, like Chuck, you know? Never, you know? So she knew what she was doing. She knew what was to come. You know, this was just a preview of how I was going to get, because I got even nuttier. I remember my big drama, you know, after I got kicked out of the house, the clothes flying out and me, you know, parading away, you know, like, yeah, and I remember I hadn't heard from her in, like, you know, must have been like 3 months or something, you know. And I started to get really worried, you know. So I started thinking I was doing real bad. I mean, I was really starting to drink, and that's when I went back to my parents' house, and that was a whole scene in itself, because, you know, after my big speech leaving, you know, Dad, you know, grown now and all that other stuff, and this years later, I'm coming back and begging for a spot, you know. I remember I was sitting in I called it my room, my parents' room that they allowed me to stay in. I'm sitting there and I'm drinking my old granddad or whatever I was drinking at the time, you know. And this was always my thing. I would sit there with my music, my blues, you know, because I want to hear the blues when I'm blue, you know. And I was always blue. I love the blues for different reasons now. I love it as music, not as blue, you know. But I remember sitting there and contemplating this whole thing, and I'm saying, you know, I know the problem here. I'm crazy. I'm really crazy. And no one knows that better than I do. So the next day, I went to the VA, to the psych ward. And I had this intake interview. You have to have an intake interview to get committed to the psych ward. And God bless those guys. And I've done service in psych wards in the VA. And it's some serious stuff going on in there. But my situation was, I went there because I didn't want to face up to my problem. My problem was drinking. You know, I was, you know, alcoholic insanity was setting in. But, you know, being clinically crazy, I had figured, you know, this would be a good excuse for everybody to feel sorry for me. So I went there for the intake. And this is sort of embarrassing, you know. I mean, you know, I'm not making fun of this, but I'm just saying how crazy, how stupid, you know, I what my thinking pattern was. I went there, and I'm sitting with this young psychiatrist. She must have been like, she looked like she was 18, but she was a psychiatrist. She was a doctor. She looked very young. So I'm sitting there after I drank a whole fifth of liquor. I'm sitting there in front of her, you know, for the intake, and, you know, she's asking me these questions. And she's looking at me. She says, who's the president of the United States? I'm saying to myself, this is a trick question. You know? This is a trick question, you know? So I said, well, it could be Jimmy Carter, or it could be, I'm not really sure, but it might be Kennedy, or, you know, I'm playing this game with her, you know, in me, you know, I'm thinking I'm looking real, real crazy. And this went on through the whole thing. And at the end of the interview, she's looking at me. She says, you know, you're very interesting. She said, number one, you're not coming here. Number two, you got a problem. She said, you have a drinking problem. She said, if you get help for that drinking problem, then I will allow you to come to this ward. And she said, also, if you maybe think about stopping drinking, you know, probably no one would notice whatever problem you have, you know, you think you have. So my answer to her was, you're not very good at your job, you know, because I'm crazy. You just don't know it, you know. But, you know, this is the kind of insanity, the games I played with people and the games I played with myself about this disease. She was right on point. She was right on point. She needed to ship me right to the next room and lock me up and I detoxed, at the, you know, right there, right in the next, because the alcohol recovery ward was the next section. But I didn't go near there. I wanted to be crazy. I didn't want to be an alcoholic. I didn't want to admit that I have a problem with alcohol. But this was very insane behavior, and this continued on. I'm going to speed it up just a little bit because I want to get to the New York story because that's the getting toward the end game here. I ended up leaving Miami, ended up coming to New York City, with, and I want to put this in the right context, chasing another woman, trying to get another hostage or trying to get a play, whatever. I ended up in New York City with another lady, and she was a wonderful person. We eventually got married, and we were married for 15 years, and that's another story entirely. But she was just a great, great person. And this is where New York City was the beginning of the end. The jig was pretty much up at the time, you know, and I was just hanging on by a thread. My disease was really, really kicking in, you know, I mean, to the point that it was horrible. Every day was gray. It was horrible getting up every day. It was just a tough, tough time. And you guys know what I'm talking about. The end game is rough. I mean, you feel really bad. I was listening to the speaker that was up here, and I forget your name, Chuck, Charles? Yeah. Jim, I'm sorry. Jim was talking about, you know, how he felt at the end. And I identify with that. It's just ugly. It's just pure ugliness. And every day was like that. Every day. It didn't change. I mean, no matter what you had on the outside or what you had in your pockets or what you had, it's just a miserable existence, and we all can identify with that. And I heard Jim talking about he came to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1987. That's when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1987. That was a good year, you know. And you know what? I'm really, really happy about what you said, because I hear a lot of people say, well, I came and I didn't stay and it was, you know, and I'm sorry, you know. But you took it another level and you put it on another level. Hey, I came here, and you know what? I didn't stay here, but it was a foundation it was a good foundation for me, because that led me to 2000, where I really, really was ready, you know? And that's a tribute to this whole thing that we're involved in here, the foundation, getting there, getting here, getting it in your head, and it don't leave you, you know? I mean, you can't, he had a few years out there drinking after then, but I'm sure he wasn't very comfortable with it, you know? it's just not something you become comfortable with once you find out what it's really about, you know? And I came in 1987, my sobriety date is May 16th, 1987. And I've just been very, very blessed. Now, how I got here is another story. I ended up, you know, hanging out in parks in New York City and drinking every day and going to bars at night and sleeping in the streets and urinating on myself and just going to the pits and really thought I had it going on. I mean, I used to walk down the Bowery and see the guys that, you know, in the cardboard box and said, you know, I got a place to live, you know, I got an apartment, you know, and I would shake, you know, and you know, I would be out in the cold in a short sleeve shirt, you know. This is the kind of stuff that I was doing, and thought that, you know, I was really, you know, above it all, above them, you know. And like I said, I got sober in the Bowery, and I'm grateful I got sober down in the Bowery, because that's what it took for me to get to see who I was, you know, see who I am. I remember I hadn't talked about this in a long time, but I actually was drinking in a bar one night on the Lower East Side. It was a blues bar. So y'all know I love the blues. And the blues go with the booze. I was in a blues bar. They had live entertainment there. They didn't have live entertainment there that night. But it was on 2nd Avenue, 14th Street. And I was sitting next to a young lady that was drinking there. And, you know, and I was having my normal alcoholic conversation. Blah, blah, you know. Get hard. What'd you say? Think that I'm very articulate when I drink, you know. You know how we think we talk well when we drink. Oh, boy. And I remember her saying to me, you got a problem. And I was shocked, you know. I was shocked. And she said, you know, I know a place you can go. It's a meeting right on St. Mark's. They have meetings all the time. Have you ever heard of AA? I said, no. No, I never heard of AA. And truthfully, I had never really heard of AA. I've heard kind of about AA, but never in that context, someone saying, you know, AA, you need to go to AA. Everybody's telling me, you got a drinking problem, you need to go to the hospital, rehab, you need to get out my face, you know. I'll smack you, you say another word. Everything but go to AA meeting. She said to me, she said, there's an AA meeting right down the street, I think you need to go. And I thought she was being like cute, you know, but she was serious. She was dead serious. I mean, she was straight up serious. This is amazing. I saw that young lady one other time, and you know when I saw her, she met me at a meeting and gave me a big book, and it was the last time I seen her. Last time I seen her. I've been to hundreds of meetings in New York City. Never ran into her again. It was just, you know, an amazing, you know, here's the big book. I still got it today. She signed it. I have no idea what her story is, to be honest with you. I don't know why she was in the bar. I don't know why she was drinking. She might have had a slip. I don't know. I just know that person was there for me at that time, and for some reason I listened, because the next day I showed up at a meeting. I showed up at a meeting, and the meeting was at St. Mark's Place. It was in a basement. It was the old Electric Circus. If anybody remembers the Electric Circus in New York City, the same location, down in the basement. Dark. Dark. I dug that. It was like my kind of place. It was a dark meeting, and you know, lights are down, and I was dark at the time, so I wanted something dark. You know, I like this night too. You know, there was a big meeting, huge meeting, a lot of people there. I remember that. I remember the speaker doing exactly what I'm doing tonight, sharing experience, strength, and hope. Heard some real interesting stuff, that's kind of stuck with me. And one thing he said was you didn't have to drink for 24 hours. Make it through 24 hours and, you know, make it back to a meeting. And that's your saving grace. 24-hour periods. Don't think about anything. Just work on that 24. And I said, yeah, I can do that. Was able to get back to the next meeting and assume the position I was in the last time, all the way to the way to the back of the room, way to the farthest corner, the last seat on the aisle, the last corner in the room, the farthest distance from everyone else. Didn't want to be a part of that. Found it very amusing, very theatrical too. To be honest with you, someone sharing his story, it was amusing to me. I was everybody was laughing, and it was like great, you know. I didn't believe it was for me, to be honest with you. I thought that I was there, you know, to be entertained, you know, which was a little crazy, but and also there to see what was there, interest, you know. Didn't dawn on me that, you know, it was for me. It was more some place to be because I had nowhere to go. You know, and that's kind of sad because that was the end of the road for me. I had nowhere to go, so why not? I'll try this. I'll hang out there. I'll, you know, maybe I could, you know, feel better for a little bit, and then I'll go back and drink. You know, I don't know. I was sitting in my next meeting, sitting in the back, and right before the meeting, there was a light right over the door. I think I talked about this last time we spoke. There's a light right over the door, and through the door walked a gentleman that I knew from 14th Street. He had cut my hair a few times. His name was James. Still sober today. Wonderful guy. Tall guy. Big guy. He kind of came in the door and kind of filled up the door frame. And he's walking in the door, and you got to picture this. This is a really dark room. And he's looking around. He's walking. He's looking around. Saying hey there, you know, people as you go. And he's looking around like he's looking for somebody. And all of a sudden he looks around and he looks at me and he stops. And he says, and smiles. And he starts to walk toward me. And he's, you got to picture this, he's a very tall guy. He was stepping over chairs, literally, because it was a very crowded meeting and, you know, everyone wasn't seated. So he's stepping over rows of chairs coming toward me. And I'm looking at him and saying, is he crazy or what? You know, why is he coming over here? I don't want to stop here. I don't want to even know I'm here, you know. So James came over and he held out his hand. He said, welcome. He said, man, I knew something about you. I'm glad you're here. I want you to hang around. I want to see you after the meeting. Just kind of hang out a little bit, you know. I want to introduce you to a couple of people that, you know, I know. One person that's in particular I want you to meet. So James went, and he went to the front of the room. He sat right in the front, right in front of the speaker, right where Jim is sitting, right in front of the speaker, man. And I'm saying, why is he sitting there? Why is he sitting right up there? He must be something important, you know. I found out later that's where he sat, and that's where he liked to hear the message, and that's where he sat every time he came to the meeting, and that's where he'd like to be. But anyway, during the meeting, as I thought to myself, like, I'm going to sneak out of here because I don't want to see him after the meeting, James knew exactly what was going on in my head. So every, seemed like 15 seconds, he would do this. He would keep looking at me. He did not give me an opportunity to sneak out of the meeting. So the meeting was over, to make a long story short, the meeting was over, and he introduced me to literally every man in the room. It seemed like to me it was 100 guys. It was probably only 20, but it was a lot of them. One of them eventually became my sponsor very soon after, still my sponsor today, Phil P., wonderful man, wonderful gentleman, has 35 years of life, just got me through all kind of crap in my life. Just a great guy. Still have friends I talk to. I talked to two of them today. That got sober with me. One is celebrating the anniversary of Willie Mann, one of the greatest guys in the world. Celebrating 15 years today. He is just like super crazy, the bed bug, but still kicking, man. He's like great. I love him. And we talked about, you know, the good old days, you know, the old home group there. But anyway, I still talk to those guys all the time and still love them and always will be, you know, part of my life, those guys. I talked a little bit earlier, we were talking earlier backstage there, back in the back there, about retreats. That has been very important in my life. We were talking about Nat Talbot One over in Morristown, my retreat group that I attended for the... I've been there for like 27 retreats, and, you know, that's a major milestone in my life. You know, they gave me that little coin, man. I was so proud of that. You know, the guys at 25, you know, they wear the coin around. Have a little coin there. So I really enjoyed that, and that's helped me immensely. This whole program here is just like the greatest. You know, I can't say enough about this stuff. I really can't. I am so blessed. You know, I have friends that did so much less than I did that are dead from this disease. I mean, you know, I'm just amazed, you know, how are you plucked out of this whole thing? You know, who picked you? Who picked you? Who picked you? Who picked me? You know, we've been given a gift. And I really just get so choked up about that. You know, when I reflect on how blessed we all are to be here. Because, you know, there are people in our family that are so, you know, you just wish for them. You just pray for them. You know, I wish they would get this because you know they're dying. You know they're dying. And they just have no joy. I got a sister and I pray for her every day. My youngest sister. She's in such bad shape. Really, she is. And I've taken her to meetings. I've talked to her. But, you know, we can't get people sober. We can only, you know, we can only serve as examples and present, you know, the tools to get sober and stuff to them. And we wish for people to get here. This has been a blessing in my life. This has been such a wonderful journey. I'm so happy to be here in Clearwater. It's wonderful. And I'm inviting you back. And I know you're going to be back because you're going to love it here. I'm going to see you at the next retreat, too. So I'm going to sort of end here. I got more, but another time. I love you guys. Thank you for allowing me a platform to just share tonight. And you know, I just wish, you know, anybody that's kind of, you know, uneasy about what am I alcoholic? You know, don't even think it. Man, try this. This is the best. This is the best game in town. This is. Ask anybody in this room. This is the best game in town. This is life. This is living. That other crap, that ain't living. That's dying. This is living. Thank you very much.